So this session today, then, as I say, I'm the replacement, Mike. I haven't done this session for a while, so hopefully I'm not too rusty and you guys will cut me a little bit of slack, but I hope it's something that we find interesting. And as Magnus said, it's all about hybrid connectivity. We develop applications in the cloud, but we need to integrate them with on-premise applications. And the key thing to remember is it's not just applications in the cloud talking to on-premise, it's also the other way. Applications on-premise may need to talk to the cloud. And the outcomes for this session is, I think if you guys go away from here and you think, actually, Mike's told me some quite cool stuff about Azure, I've hopefully told you maybe something that you weren't aware of on Azure. If you go away thinking, well, we've learned a little bit about real world challenges, so I'm going to talk about some real projects that I've done with these techs. And hopefully if you go away thinking those things, then I think I've done an okay job. So the agenda is that we're going to talk a little bit about what this hybrid technology challenge is. We're going to do a lap around the different technologies that are available. Based on the audience today, there's a couple of technologies I'll talk a little bit deeper about than others, but I want to try and get them all covered in this sort of hour that we've got. And then we'll talk a little bit about app service as well. So the hybrid challenge, then, I've seen this diagram load or a flavor of this diagram a load of times where we paint this picture of the organization and we say, look, you've got your on-prem stuff, you've got your cloud stuff, you know, we've got our things, our partners, our SaaS applications, and they all need to work together. And we see this diagram where we've got this big line between the two of them, and we kind of say, yep, this line makes them work together. But the problem is nobody really tells you what that line is and how you build that line, what does it look like, what technologies are involved. And the whole point of this session is to really elaborate on what is this line, because it's so important to the architectures we're going to build. Now, in Azure, we've got, actually what's quite funny is this, as the years have gone on, or the months have gone on since I did this session the very first time, the number of circles around this thing in the middle has kind of grown a bit. So we started off, there was only a few of them, and now there's about eight, I think. So the different ways you can connect on-premise resources and cloud resources, there's sort of four categories. So we've got the networking level stuff. So if you're an IT pro, some things that'll be quite familiar to you, but I think even developers today, we need to be aware of what these things are. So we'll touch on some of those. We've got some things that come into the service bus category, and we'll talk a little bit about those too. We've got some BizTalk stuff, which is there in Azure. And we've also got these new API apps, and we'll touch a bit on those as well. So let's just jump straight in, I think. And we'll start talking about site-to-site VPN, and we'll do the network and stuff first. So everybody's heard of a VPN. If you haven't, where have you been? You know, they've been around for years. The great thing about VPN is that if you're in an organization doing cloud, your IT pros are going to go, yeah, I know what that means. That's something I'm comfortable with. So if you're building resources in Azure and you want to create a VPN to connect to on-prem resources, you're often in a good place to start with, even if your organization's quite new to cloud. And there's some target scenarios VPNs aimed at. So we're really talking about infrastructure level connectivity here. We're talking about connecting VM to VM, potentially cloud service to VM. Now, the benefits of site-to-site VPN is it's really at a network level. So we're talking about these IP level resources. And again, with it being familiar to infrastructure teams, it's probably going to be something that's not too difficult to set up. But there are a couple of constraints that you need to be aware of. So many people, when they create their first VM in the cloud, don't bother with a virtual network. So that's one of the dependencies for a site-to-site VPN, is you need your cloud resource, whether it be a worker role or a VM, to be part of a virtual network. Otherwise, you can't do this VPN connectivity. But site-to-site VPN, so one of the things about that is it runs over your public internet channel. So you'll be creating this tunnel from the cloud network over the public internet to your on-prem resources. You'll find that you'll get good performance out of it, but we'll also talk in a minute about something called Express Route, which is similar, but we'll talk about the pros and cons of VPN over Express Route. Now, with VPN, the classic use case for it is all about lift and shift of VMs. So let's pretend I've got my on-prem data center. I've got, you know, the usual suspects in my data center, you know, mainframes, AD, web servers, and all that kind of stuff. And the idea is that I'll create a network in Azure and I'll just start moving some of these machines over. Some machines might be better candidates than others. So maybe your mainframe's going to be something you probably couldn't move to the cloud, but things like web servers, they're really obvious candidates that you can potentially shift there. We've also got the option of not just VMs, but also cloud services can potentially be part of a network. So let's take one example with API management. Maybe you could say Azure web apps as well. Sorry, I never get used to that name change. Web apps and API management. So I could potentially create an API management proxy in the cloud, but I can connect that to a virtual network, which allows me to use VPN. So if you imagine I've got my API management there, my virtual network, create the VPN to a service that's actually on-prem. So my little man in the cloud can make his calls to the API, and it's just going to route straight through to my on-prem, REST service, something like that. It's quite a good simple use case where you can start leveraging hybrid straight away. Next, let's think about Express Route. So Express Route is very similar to site-to-site VPN. The key difference is that Express Route is an MPLS-based network. So it's effectively like making Azure another site on your WAN. And the biggest technical difference is probably the fact that it's going to run over a private network connection as opposed to your public internet connection. So when I worked with a customer in the UK, we were actually the first customer to start using Express Route in the UK. And one of the biggest differences from an implementation perspective is I could go to the guys in our IT pro team and, talk to them about setting this VPN up, and they can do it pretty much all by themselves. Express Route's a little bit different, so you'd need to engage with your network provider. So for us, that meant getting involved with BT. We had to do some stuff with, collaboration between us, Microsoft, and BT to get that all set up in the first place. So I think what you'd find if you were looking down the Express Route option is that it'll take a little bit more time to set that up. Having said that, there's a number of benefits of it. So from the perspective of it being a private connection, that might tick a few extra boxes on your security, your security audits. You'll also find that with Express Route, you can probably buy higher bandwidth, lower latency options with that as well. So if you're doing certain loads, you're shifting a lot of data between on-prem and the cloud, that might be a much better option than a VPN potentially. You're going to pay a little bit more probably to get that, but the right use case needs the right solution. Now, if we take a look at a visualization of what that looks like, let's pretend we've got a company here who's got a data center in the UK, data center in Miami, data center in Denmark, and it's based on an MPLS network, and effectively Azure just becomes another site. So if you're thinking about things like site recovery, I want to replace my DR data center with Azure, MPLS based Express Route's probably something you want to look at. Another use case again would be this extended data center scenario. So maybe we do like before where we create this bridge between our networks. We probably would do something like put an Active Directory copy in the cloud just to give us some performance benefits. And again, we can shift some servers over and it just becomes like one big network for us. A project where I also used this, which was quite interesting and a little bit different, was using this company who's got data centers in Miami, Denmark, and the UK. And actually, they had other data centers elsewhere as well, but let's just focus on those three. They wanted to do this solution where they bring, if you imagine they've got different subsidiary businesses and they want to bring data together into one place to be able to do some analysis. We see a lot of companies starting to, do big data models where it's all different data, different formats. It's a bit chaotic and we want to mine it. So our idea was with Express Route, we can make it really easy to copy some big data sets from the UK and Miami into a SQL Server data warehouse in the cloud, which gives us a lot of BI capability. So when we got that data there through SSIS, we can do some Power BI reporting on top of that. It's a really, really easy way to start creating a global reporting solution, but we've actually solved quite a lot of the difficult challenges of how do you get the data to one place to report on it. Next, we've got point-to-site VPN. So point-to-site VPN is probably the poor man in this whole presentation deck, because all of the other ones are really cool big enterprise use cases. But point-to-site VPN is a little bit different. So the use case here isn't about connecting data centers. It's about connecting your desktop to a network in Azure. So many customers that we work with, we have challenges about how do we get from their office to our VM in Azure. You know, I've had that many times. And the idea is, it's a bit like if you work for a consultancy company, you often have a VPN client to talk back to head office when you're on the road. Same kind of concept, where we can have an Azure network and we can download this VPN agent, and that allows us to connect back to that network. And the idea is it'll tunnel RDP over the SSTP protocol, makes it firewall friendly, and it means we can hit that VM in the cloud without having to deal with a lot of the restrictions that many companies have. The key thing here is that if you want to do this, you need your VM to be part of a virtual network. So again, that thing I mentioned earlier, if it's a standalone VM, you're not going to be able to use this. But if we take a look at one of the cases where I used this, we had a customer where we've got this globally distributed dev team. So we're all over the world. We had developers in Romania, India, America, the UK, and everybody can get to this dev environment in the cloud, and it was working really well. You know, great use case. You know, how difficult is it to get a globally distributed dev team going? Well, this kind of really empowered us. But the problem we had was in the UK, you know, we're leading this, but the problem is we're the only ones who can't get to the VMs in Azure. And, you know, we had the common blockers from an organization's infrastructure team, where it's something they don't really understand and they're not really sure what we're doing. Sometimes they're a little bit disconnected from the project. So the challenge was, well, how do we reach these VMs? You know, but they didn't want to punch holes in the firewall or anything like that. So the point-of-site VPN was the solution for us, where in the UK, we can just download that agent and we can connect to those VPNs without having to make significant changes on-prem. But for everybody else, they were just able to get in there because they were in offices that weren't quite as locked down. Next, we've got stepping from the networking space to the service bus area. So I talked in the last presentation about service bus relay, and I know a lot of you guys know this a little bit already, but for anybody who isn't familiar with service bus relay, you know, everybody's come across services and the idea of when you want to load balance a website or a web service, you usually stick a load balancer in front of it. So let's pretend for a moment that we took that load balancer and just moved that up to the cloud instead of it being on-prem. And our services that are listening for calls coming in, they're just registered against this cloud-based endpoint. So that if we hit that endpoint in the cloud, that call's going to be forwarded down on-premise. That makes that endpoint available outside of the organization now. But the key thing is that not only is it available outside the organization, it's available securely as well. Now, the target use cases here are really around WCF. So if you're building a SOAP or a REST-based service with WCF, you can use the bindings to listen on the relay instead of just exposing it as a typical passive service in IIS. The biggest benefit, in my opinion, is of service bus relay is just that it's so simple to do. You know, and all the projects I've done with cloud, relay's often been one of the first features that we used on Azure because it lets us do some really cool stuff really simply, and it's really inexpensive as well. Dan's not here to complain about how little money he makes from it. I think he must still be on the way in or something. But, you know, although it's cheap, that helps us, because it means we can get stuff up and running really quickly. Now, I guess the big constraint on it, though, as I mentioned, it's all about WCF. So if you're building services that aren't using the WCF stack, that might be a limitation for you guys. I guess the other thing is the management and monitoring story for Service Bus Relay is kind of a little bit weak as well. There's you know, one of the trade-offs is that there's not that much to see because it's just an endpoint. So as long as you can see the endpoints online, there's not that much more to it. But maybe one of the answers to that is Dan's session yesterday, where he was talking about all these service bus counters that a lot of people don't know are there. Now, if we take a look at a project I worked on where we used Relay, this is one of my simplest projects I've ever worked on, but also one of my favorites. So we did some stuff in the UK where we used Relay to empower a hybrid API. and we were really successful with it. But we've got a partner company in Denmark, and they heard about what we were doing, and they kind of said, look, we've got this solution where we've got a big investment in WebSphere, and we've got this application being built at a partner, and they need to talk to our WebSphere. And we've got all these, you know, 10 years worth of investment in these services we've built. But the problem is, how do we get them to talk to WebSphere? And they heard about what we were doing, and they just said, look, can you come over and just let us explore this idea, because we think it might help us out. And we, you know, we don't want to just jump into the traditional VPN option when we think there might be other ways. So we went over to Denmark, and the idea was, can we do hybrid integration in one day? That was the challenge. And, you know, challenge accepted. I haven't done the pirate joke yet, so I haven't succeeded on that challenge. Is it tomorrow, is it?
Yeah, it's tomorrow.
Yes. Thank you. I'll get away with that one then. So in December, I went, you know, not December, a couple of years ago, I went to Denmark. And Copenhagen's a fantastic place, but it was freezing in December. And we went to the office of this company who'd never done Azure before. And we went in, and they knew we did BizTalks. Their first thought for some of their guys was, oh, they're going to come and make us replace WebSphere with BizTalk. And they were expecting us to say, oh, it's going to cost you a few hundred thousand pounds or whatever. But we went in and said, look, you know, nah, we don't want to, you know, BizTalk's great, but you've got 10 years of investment in WebSphere. Why don't we just reuse what you've got and add something to it to expose this to the cloud? So we spent the morning of that day, we spent on the whiteboard explaining to them what Service Bus Relay was about. We spent the afternoon doing a proof of concept. So the idea was, we create a Service Bus Relay instance in the cloud. We use the WCF routing service on premise, and they give us a VM to put that on. And what we could do then is, we can actually take the services that are exposed already, SOAP services from WebSphere, and we can route the calls through the Service Bus Relay, through the WCF routing service, and onto the existing WebSphere box. And what that meant was that, by without writing a single line of code, we've just got a config file with some routing rules in, a Service Bus Relay endpoint, and by the end of that afternoon, we were able to call from the partner data center and consume those services from WebSphere. So it was actually hybrid integration in half a day, not a day. That was pretty powerful, you know? And the great thing was, we left after that, and those guys were .NET guys, they were pretty good, and they only ever really got in touch with us three times to ask a few questions after that. They just ran with that project, and it went live, and it was really successful. And the key thing is, we added to what they already had, and we cloud-enabled it with some Azure technology. You can see how that would have worked. Oh, sorry, I've got some dodgy animations in this.
Question there.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you go back?
Yeah.
I want to see the animation again.
There you go. Just for you.
Oh, yeah, I want to do it. I can see that this is a cool thing to use, but I'm an on-prem guy. Why not just use the traditional VPN solution?
Great question.
WCF routing service there. Why do I need a sort in this particular?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. The question was, why do I need Azure? Why couldn't I just do VPN? So I'll tell you a story about another project I did many years ago where they did exactly that. They had services on-prem. They created a VPN from the Isle of Man, and it was a tax thing, I'm sure, but the application was deployed in the Isle of Man, and it called back the services on-prem. And they created a VPN. Now, the single reason why that was not the best option here, you know, they could have done that, but they would have spent, you know, hours in meetings talking about how to set the VPN up, liaising with the various IT pro teams. They would have spent a lot of money setting a VPN up. And, the whole kind of, you know, just the, think back to the IT two modes before. VPNs really fall into the traditional mode, where it's a lot of red tape and a lot of things to make that happen. Whereas this was really in the sprinter mode, where we can set this up really quickly. And actually the running costs for that whole solution, that, you know, they went live after the POC. We had it up and running in a day. By the end of the year, they'd spent less than £50, whereas they would have spent probably £1,000 on the first meeting to talk about, should we do a VPN, you know? So, you know, if you think about things like, you know, I talked about API management before, time to first successful call. Our time to first successful call was half a day. with a VPN, I would bet that would be probably a month. You know, if you think of real world IT. Yeah.
Also, the benefit if you add partners to it, rather than having VPN, you have that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. And I guess the other thing was, you know what? They could quite easily have got partway through that project and went, you know what, we want to go to VPN instead now anyway. And they could have just turned that off and not used it anymore, and they wouldn't have paid any more for it. So it could have proved the concept that the application could consume WebSphere, but then just change the architecture later. I think that's quite a powerful one as well. I'm just going to skip over this one in the interest of time. That's a slide that was from the deck previously, just about we did a similar architecture with that other university project. So next we've got service bus messaging. And service bus messaging is the first one with a different communication pattern. So we talked at the minute about even the networking ones. The idea is all we have a client who opens an active connection to a destination, sends some data over the wire, maybe gets some data back, closes that connection. The difference with service bus messaging is there's something in the middle now. So we're not talking directly to the destination. We're going to send some data to a queue, and the destination's going to come along and pick that up later on. Now, there's a couple of things that gives us. So firstly, that means we can now have an asynchronous communication pattern that could be durable as well. So we can have the destination receives the message sometime in the future after the sender sends it. So it could be a few seconds later. It could be months later. You know, we could do the feature we were talking about yesterday about deferring and snoozing messages, and the destination could just go, I'm not ready for it yet. The key thing is you've got that durability in the middle, which is really powerful for many solutions. We also have the option to do pub sub here. So if we wanted to do a synchronous connection, doing pub sub might be quite difficult. But with that broker in the middle, we can pop a message on a topic and have that route to many destinations. And the sender doesn't necessarily know who those all are. Again, with service bus messaging, it's very simple to get up and running. So you can be up and running in a matter of a few minutes to an hour. The costs, again, as Dan's been complaining about, the costs are very low for this. So you can send a really high volume of messages and still be in the region of tens of pounds, not hundreds of thousands. You know, if you think of something like, I want to send 1 million messages a day, to create your own infrastructure to be able to do that, again, probably costs you like tens and maybe even hundreds of thousands of pounds before you send the first real message. Whereas in service bus, you can do that with a few clicks. Now, with service bus messaging, there's a few constraints again. So you really need to be talking either AMQP, REST, or the .NET native SB messaging protocol. So many applications can now talk these protocols. So it's maybe less of a constraint than it used to be. But you might need to be aware of that depending on what application it is. But hey, you know what? If I can call it from Minecraft, it can't be that difficult. So if we think of a couple of projects then where I've used this. So number one, a pretty cool project I did once was this global API. So it's again with this big company with many different locations. And the idea was all of these businesses around the world where even through acquisitions we're adding more all the time. And they all get treated like completely different businesses. So if we have one business partner who works with us in Miami, UK and Denmark, basically they have to integrate with three separate companies, and that's really expensive. So if we've got a competitor who they can just integrate with once, that's a big cost benefit and a big disadvantage to us. So our plan was to create a global API where we could have a partner could integrate to just one API and we'll just deal with the local integration challenges of our individual businesses. And the real plan was to be able to kind of plug and play new businesses into this architecture, but it just looks like one API to the end user. Now, if you think back a few years, I mean, God, like five years ago, 10 years ago, trying to build one API across multiple businesses, just the technical challenge of connecting these things together before you get into the data, before you get into the applications, that technical piece would have cost thousands. And, you know, I would argue many projects who tried it would probably fail before they got to the first hurdle because it would just be so difficult. But actually, when I did this project, we created an API in Azure. You know, we've got options for doing things like Traffic Manager, multi-data center hosting to really create a genuinely global API, but with Service Bus we can pub sub, so we can send messages to these queues and have different businesses pick up their own messages and solve their own local problems about how to do this. So maybe business one in the UK might pick up messages with BizTalk, hook into SAP mainframes and whatever, service response messages back to the queue. But business two in Denmark, they could maybe use WebSphere and do the same thing. WebSphere has AMQP capability. So, you know, I think Mikkel down there wrote an article once about how to consume service bus queues from WebSphere. Now, if we take a look at what that looks like, pop service bus queues in the middle, and we can kind of pub sub across these different organizations. When I first did that, we had the first proof of concept hooking Denmark and the UK into this one operation. It took us a couple of weeks to get up and running. Again, that's powerful. You know, that often would have taken months and months in the past if you even succeeded. When we got to the point of plugging Miami in, I had the Miami dev team up and running, building features in under a week. The infrastructure of the architecture was there just straight away. We just plugged them in. Likewise with Service Bus. So I mentioned earlier, it's not all about reaching from the cloud on-prem. You might want to go the other way. So let's pretend we've got BizTalk and we want to pull data out of a SQL server, and we may publish that up to a Service Bus queue, and we could maybe do pub sub, and we could route that out to different consumers. Maybe some messages go to Dynamics, some go to various business partners, so we can push data to the cloud as well, and we can spray that out across wherever it needs to go. So one of the newer ones in this deck is the event hubs. So event hubs are very similar to service bus queues from the perspective of, I make a call to an entity over the AMQP protocol, if I'm really doing it the way that I can do it the best. To the consumer sending the message, it just looks like the same thing, but under the hood, they're very different. So I don't want to go too much into that because Dan talked a little bit about it. The only thing I would say is, one, I've got a really good article if you're interested in low-level detail about this. But two, if you think of the difference, is that a queue, I pop a message on a queue, somebody comes along and takes a copy of that message and then deletes it. That means you've got some scale limitations on that, and you can only receive a message once off a queue, but you can maybe use a topic to get multiple queues receiving a copy of the same one. But an event hub, the difference is that it's like a stream of messages, and you can have many people have a pointer to that stream that they can read across, and they can also rewind back up the stream. So that's one of the big differences with event hub. If I spray events onto it and I want rewind capability, that would give you the option of event hub. Now, key benefits of this are massive scale, low cost, read the message many times, but you need to consider how you're going to process the data is going to be the big thing. So I think a lot of businesses might do things like IoT use cases, spraying telemetry onto an event hub. The question is, what do you do with it then? Where do you get it? So if you're going into a BI stack like Cortana, you've probably got this big scale to do some really cool stuff. But if you're bringing it on-premise, you know, your applications on-prem might be big, but they're not going to be cloud scale necessarily. So you might have to be a little bit careful about how you do that. But that's a use case where I think some companies will use Event Hub to bring data from the cloud. You just, you know, you load level this storm of data onto an Event Hub and just pull it down at a rate that's acceptable. An example of where we use this. So one of the bits in the demo that I showed before that I didn't really go into was in addition to the telemetry from the buildings, I also had telemetry from the entire API stack. So I've got a log for NetAppender, which writes up to an event hub. So if you imagine we've got this integration stack going along here, and as the message goes through the wire, I've got this log for Net stuff streaming telemetry data about what's happening to the cloud. I can then build a BI stack on the back of that, so I could do some stream analytics, machine learning, Power BI, and start presenting what's going on in my applications if I wanted to. So maybe that would look something a bit like this. Then we stream it up and it all hits the event hub, and then we can create visualizations. You know, that architecture there's kind of like what Application Insights is doing, but you can do it yourself if you want to get it at a higher level and not that low level App Insights stuff. So these are the two ones I'm going to brush over a little bit. So we do have two capabilities in the existing BizTalk services space that are available to do hybrid. The first one's called BizTalk Adapter Service. So the idea here is that you've got the WCF relay, and you've got this BizTalk adapter pack sitting on top of it, and it gives you kind of connectors for each application. And if you're already an existing customer of this, you'll be familiar with it. If you haven't come across this before, I'd kind of say hang fire, because there's other things I'm going to show you in a minute that I think are better options to look at. But this is still there in Azure today. It's live, it's available. And the idea is that before, when I was using Service Bus Relay, I'm kind of doing the WCF stuff myself. With an adapter service, I'm at a higher level of abstraction. So I'm doing some stuff at a SAP connectivity level, where the kind of adapter service deals with how to make a call to SAP. It just uses that relay to bridge down on-prem. So if we take a bit of a look at what that looks like, I may have a BizTalk EAI bridge in the cloud. I have my adapter service in the cloud with my endpoint and my management. I install an agent on-premise, and then it kind of reaches through a bit like that. So I can make a call from my BizTalk services bridge down into SAP. Now, as I say, it's available, but if you're not using it already, hang fire. Again, likewise with BizTalk Hybrid Connections. So that's part of the BizTalk services suite. And this, whereas with the adapter service, I went to a higher level of abstraction, where it's dealing with line of business connectivity. Adapter service has gone the other way, and it's gone to a lower level of abstraction where I can actually do it at port level, not application level. So the idea here was that I could create, maybe I create a website in the cloud, and in my website I want to make an MLLP call to an HL7 application. So the idea is I could probably use the hybrid connection to install an agent on-prem and make a call through to that application from my Azure website. So the couple of constraints here are you need to be in either a mobile services or a web app to be able to use this. And the idea was that you're lower level at port level, not WCF level, and you're not at line of business level. So in theory, it's quite a cool service. But actually, again, with this one, because it's in that BizTalk services suite that's sort of migrating into app services, I'd say unless you're using it already, kind of hang fire and move to some of that newer stuff. The idea of where you'd use this one, though, in the past was kind of a lift and shift of a website. So if you went, imagine my on-prem website talks to Oracle, and I kind of move it up to the cloud, create my hybrid connector, install my agent on-prem, and I can call through to that database. Now, the one thing that is really powerful about this is if I'm calling from that website code, imagine when I move that application, I might be making an ODP.NET call to Oracle, straight from .NET code. Now, I move that to the cloud, and I can just change the connection string to point to the hybrid endpoint in the cloud. So it means I haven't changed the line of code in C#, just the connection string, and I can still reach that Oracle database that's on-prem. That's pretty cool. So what about the app service? And so this is the new stuff, and I demoed this slightly before, but for those of you who aren't aware, app service has got four key areas. So we've got web apps, mobile apps, logic apps, and API apps. And the API connectors are really where it starts getting very interesting. So we've got connectivity for many of the SaaS applications that are out there, many of the line of business apps as well. So if we take, I don't know what examples we've got, SAP. If you want to connect to SAP, the chances are your SAP's going to be on-premise. So that connector is a bit like the BizTalk adapter service that I mentioned before, where we're really looking at a specific application. But what that does is under the hood, it's using the next kind of iteration of that hybrid connection, but it's part of the new app service stack. So you would install BizTalk's hybrid connection agent on-premise, and your SAP connector in a logic app would be able to reach through to your SAP on-prem. An example of where you might use that in the logic app, you know, you can put in one of these connectors into your workflow, just apply some configuration, and there's you talking to your backend services. Maybe it looks something like that. So we've got logic app can talk through the API connected to Office 365, pull some data from a SharePoint list, and then it talks to the SAP API app, which under the hood uses the Service Bus Relay, and reaches down to our SAP on-premise server. Likewise, I don't need to just use a Logic app. I could maybe build my own web app that uses one of those API connectors. And it just gives me this nice, clean abstraction from worrying about all the low-level protocol stuff. I just see it as an API that I call, and I'm calling it over HTTP, and the adapter connect, you know, deals with SAP complexity. So if we think about where we are then for app service, so in app service, you've got a bunch of choices. You can use many of the existing stuff we've got. So if you're deploying a Logic app, you're going to be living on the app service, which means you're in the same place as a web app where you can be part of a virtual network if you wanted to. If you're part of a virtual network, that means your choices are you can use ExpressRoute, you can use site-to-site VPN if you want. So if you're in an organization where, you know, the IT pros really call the shots about how you do this stuff, you can use stuff that they're going to be familiar with. If you're in an organization where it's more at the kind of platform level and, you know, maybe your architects and developers are making these decisions and the IT pros aren't influencing it to be a networking level thing. So maybe you can use Service Bus Relay, messaging, or an event hub. That might be a good choice, especially if you've got certain use cases that are just good fits for that. The ones at the bottom here, the adapter service and the hybrid connection, the key thing is that they've changed as BizTalk services has migrated towards the new Logic apps and API apps. So I'd say if you're coming new to this space, look to that app service stuff. If you're already in that space, you might want to think about how you migrate at some point in the future. But the key thing is BizTalk services are still live as it is now. So there's no communication yet about when that migration would have to be done by. But the concepts are very similar. You know, this idea about low-level abstraction at hybrid area, high-level abstraction at application connectivity. So that's kind of my lap around everything. Hopefully I've given a view of all the different options. Hopefully there's some options people haven't really come across before. It's given you something to think about. I hope the discussion about real-world examples has a lot of benefits as well. And, you know, gives you some things to think about how you talk to customers with about this stuff. But otherwise, I'd just like to invite any questions if anybody has any. Is anybody using any options right now? Or anybody thinking about any options? No? Which options? What are you using?
Service bus relays.
Okay.
No.
So is that web apps reaching down to on-prem services?
Yeah.
Now, how do you guys find that?
It's working. it's great. It's quite simple to do.
Yeah.
This customer has a huge investment in BizTalk and WCS services from before. So the relays are a perfect match.
So do you reach straight down into BizTalk with a BizTalk receive location listening? Well, that that WCF routing service is one of the ones I found quite interesting, because sometimes if you've got an existing service, you know, if you've got an old SOAP service of some kind, it's not easy without changing the code to make it listen on the relay out of the box. And sometimes you don't want to because other people use it. But the great thing with WCF routing service is you can just plonk that in front of it and it listens and can just forward the calls on. So you don't even need to change the application that's already deployed. You can just open up this new channel for it. Cool. I think that's it, mate.
That's it then. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for going through this.